Acts 2:44 is where we've left off. There are some things that we do want to look at in some detail. We don't have a handout, but we're going to, for a week or two, talk about some related issues as far as fellowship, the closeness, the bond that Christians had, and the fact that they were sharing some things. As you look at Acts 2:44, and we'll also take a look at 2:45, but that may not be today. 2:44 says, "And all that believed were together." That, of course, would describe the people who had become Christians. "They were together and had all things common." Acts 2:45 says, "And they sold their possessions and goods and parted them to all according as any man had need." Now, we've already seen from Acts 2:42 some of the items that help bond or bind Christians together. Back in that 42nd verse, you have, "They continued steadfastly." They, of course, would be the people, the about 3,000 who had been converted. "They continued steadfastly in the apostles' teaching, fellowship, in the breaking of bread and the prayers." So there were different aspects of worship that caused them to be bound together on a regular basis. We'll see as we get a little further into the chapter, they were meeting on a regular basis, day by day, and all those things helped them form some good relationships. We want to spend some attention, or put some attention and time into all things common. That word that's translated common is an important word when it was applied to things. The definition was, and I'll give you this quote, common, mutual, public. When it applied to people, it meant related, a partner, or impartial. Now, if you skip over a page or two, you'll see that this word is also used again. It's also used over in Acts chapter 4, verse 32. That verse says, "And the multitude of them that believe were of one heart and soul," that unity that you see in Acts 2 is continuing, "and not one of them said that aught of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common." So that's very similar to what you find in Acts chapter 2, verses 44 and 45. If you study that word common, you find that it's used in a few other places, one of which, and I want to read this, is in the book of Jude. As you take Jude, verse 3, and you look at it in terms of Acts 2, 44 and 45, specifically Acts 2, 44, and you look at it in terms of Acts 4, 32, I think you have a great point that's sometimes not mentioned when people talk about Jude 3. Jude 3 says, "Beloved, while I was giving all diligence to write unto you of our what? Of our common salvation." That's the same word that you have in Acts 4:32, the same word that you have in Acts 2, verse 44. "I was giving all diligence to write unto you of our common salvation." He says, "I was constrained to write unto you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith, which was once for all delivered to the saints." Now think about this. They had all obeyed what? Jude 3. They'd all obeyed the common faith. They'd all obeyed the same faith. They were in the same boat. And because they had that bond, what are they now willing to do? Acts 2, verse 44, Acts 4, verse 32. "We're part of the same faith. We've obeyed the same plan. We have the same Lord. We're headed to the same place. We share so many things in common. Therefore, we are willing to have our possessions in common. We're willing to share." And that's exactly what you see as you start going through the book of Acts. Now, having said that, and this is where we want to spend some time today, especially with the presidential campaign. When Mr. Sanders was running, you heard some talk about socialism. I'm sorry, Steve.
Oh, I think you're heading in the direction I was going
to okay.
say.
All right.
Some people would say this is a support for communism, socialism.
Exactly. Yes. We'll put that thought on hold for just a second. But as you look at our world right now, there is a lot of talk about socialism. There's a lot of talk about equality. And socialism has sometimes been looked at as the precursor to communism. You start allowing everybody to be equal. Everybody needs to share. Since we're in the midst of a presidential election, there has been, as I say, with Mr. Sanders, he's had some things to say about that. And whatever form of government we have, I mean, the Bible doesn't say you have to have this form of government or that form of government. So if it were just a matter of government, then whatever comes, comes. Christianity can survive in any type of political arrangement. But the problem becomes for us when someone begins to stand up and say the Bible teaches socialism, or they say the Bible teaches communism, or the Bible teaches this about the poor, the Bible teaches this about this particular class, then that becomes a biblical issue. It exits the area of politics or whatever it might be. And that's what we want to look at, because sometimes, just as Steve mentioned, there have been people, I suspect people with good motives, good intentions, but misguided, who will come to what you find in Acts 2, 44 and 45, Acts chapter 4, verse 32, and let's say, look, they had all things common. That's what the Bible says. They sold their possessions, they sold their goods, they parted them, they distributed them to anyone that had need, and that's exactly what you find with socialism, that's what you find with communism, and that's what we need to have. Most of us, I think, have heard the talk about redistributing wealth. You don't have to tune in very often to the news to hear someone talk about that with the millennials. That seems to be a very popular idea. Or you've probably heard, and we've dealt with this some on Sunday mornings, human rights. If you are a human being, you have the right to health care. You have perhaps the right to free health care. Or you have the right to a job. You have the right to a livable wage. Some would even go so far as to say private property should be abolished. Not everybody believes that, but some do. And there should be this utopian world, this utopian society, where everything is peaceful, everything is harmonious, because everybody is giving and sharing. Now, if you go back, you'd have to probably be at least 40, maybe 50 years old and have been following some things. But if you go back 50 years, you will find that some sermons were preached, some books were written against communism. Anybody remember any teaching against communism some years back? All right, at least we've got maybe 20, 25% of the class. And there was a reason for that. It's not a biblical philosophy, neither socialism nor communism. Let's take a look at some passages. Somebody says, well, you know, if you're going to talk about these philosophies, how can you contrast them with the Bible? Let's pick up some references here. We'll start with two or three. Let's take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 3. Then we'll see what we have in Luke chapter 10, verse 7. Start with two New Testament passages, and then we'll go back and look at a couple verses in the Old Testament. 2 Corinthians 8, 3. That'll be Betty. And then let's also get somebody on deck for Luke chapter 10, verse 7. That'll be Brian, Luke 10, verse 7. But we start out with the 2 Corinthians letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 3. Okay, you have giving described here. But as the giving is described, what's specifically said? What's specifically said? They gave of their own accord. What does that mean? All right, it's their decision. It was a free will offering. If you're looking at communism or socialism, what kind of giving are you doing? It's forced. You will give this. Everybody's going to share in your wealth. So if you want to talk about giving under those systems, they both involve giving. But they both do not operate by the same principle. The government says, you will surrender or we will take. The Bible teaches 2 Corinthians 8, 3, New Testament, there is free will offerings. All right, then let's take a look at Luke chapter 10, verse 7.
And in the same house remain, eating and drinking such things as they give, for the laborer is worthy of his hire, though not from house to house.
Okay, now think about that general teaching. The laborer is worthy of what? His hire. That sounds a little bit like free market. The laborer is worthy of his hire. And that was information that was specifically given by Jesus.
Isn't the last part of that verse where it says don't go from house to house? That's kind of, is that indicating begging?
Well, it could be. Or it could be, I didn't use this for the afternoon lesson, but there's a green of grass syndrome that we'll talk about in the afternoon. And sometimes you, I think, had a temptation in that day and time. You go into a town, somebody says, I'll keep you. But for the apostles, as they were going to different places, you go into a town and somebody says, we'll keep you. But it's a real poor household. And somebody over here looks like they've got a better offer. Maybe there's better food or you get your own room over here. So that could have also played a part in that. But both of those things would be worthy of consideration there. Any other thoughts before we head back to the book of Proverbs? Okay, let's go back to the book of Proverbs. This is a reference that you might want to take a look at first because, it's kind of like, wow. But I think if we think about it for a minute, the point will be pretty clear. Proverbs 16, verse 26. Talks about hunger and appetite. Proverbs 16, verse 26. Who wants to read it for the class? All right, Bonnie?
He that laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him.
Okay. He that laboreth for himself because his mouth craves. Now, as you look at that, you might think, boy, you know, I just don't remember reading that verse before. What do you think he's saying there? All right, he's hungry. And the implication is he doesn't have anything to eat. So what's motivating him to go out and find some work for the day?
Physical needs.
All right, my belly is telling me it needs to be fed. And if it's going to be fed, I don't turn to the government for help. What do? I need to go out and find a job. I need to go out and do something so I can have food to buy, or money to buy food, and put that in my belly. So even the wise men, Solomon talked about that. Let's consider something else that we should remember. 1 Kings chapter 21. There was that fella who had a really attractive vineyard. Remember who the guy's name was? Started with an N? Naboth. Who wanted the vineyard? The king. Well, yeah. Jezebel, of course, was the queen, the wife. Why didn't the king just grab it? I'm the king. I'm the one who's in charge. What did the Old Testament recognize? There were property rights. So somebody comes along and says, well, hey, when you talk about the Bible, socialism, communism, property rights are found. 1 Kings 21, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 26, you have the idea there. If you have a need, in this case you need to eat, you go out and you find labor. Then let's take a look at something else. And I don't know that we've ever used these verses. This is Matthew chapter 20, verses 10 through 15. I can't remember ever using these verses in this way, but if you're going to try to deal with someone who has the idea that the Bible teaches socialism or communism, here is another very, very good passage. Brian, you there and want to read it? Thank you. Matthew chapter 20, let's start with verse 10 and read down through verse 15.
But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house, saying, these last have brought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them eat one to us, which abhorred the burden and heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that as thine, and go thy way. I will give unto this last, even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is I not evil because I am good?
Now think about what Jesus... I'm sorry. You got to the end. Yes, okay. That's what I thought. All right, thank you. When you look at what Jesus, and it was the Lord who gave this particular teaching, what's he say? This guy's hired people. Did he have to give them all the same rate? Matthew chapter 20, 10 to 15? No. He said, this is my enterprise. This is my business. I'm going to pay you this amount of money. I'm going to pay you this amount of money. And I'm going to pay you this amount of money. So when we think about the kind of system that we have, it is certainly something that is consistent with the gospel of Christ. Two, I'd point out, let's see what we've got in Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Then we'll stop and see if you have some thoughts or hands. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Somebody about there and want to take responsibility for it? Luke 12, all right, Lois.
12, 15.
Yeah, Luke 12, 15.
And he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions.
Okay, his life does not consist of the possessions he possesses. It wasn't the government. Did Jesus recognize individual ownership of property? Whose possessions were they? Jesus said they belonged to him. Private property. It's yours. So when it comes to the kind of government that we have, as I said, it is consistent with the Bible. And yet we do have, especially in our day and time, some people running around and saying, well, that Bible you believe in, if you're really a believer in Jesus, and this really rankles me, but people will say, if you really believed in Jesus, you really, you know, he was for helping the poor, so, you know, we just need to redistribute the wealth, and that way everybody's going to share in things equally, and that's what the gospel teaches. That is not what the gospel teaches. And we could look at a lot more verses than we did, but here is a pretty good summary of what you find in both the Old Testament and the New, and you can look at this from the standpoint of property. You can look at this from the standpoint of governance. You can look at this from the standpoint of how people are going to be fed, Proverbs chapter 16, and every time you keep coming back to the same conclusion. So for us, you may feel a little more strongly, a little less strongly about that, but don't buy into that idea, which is being widely circulated. Absolutely. Yeah.
But he also said the poor will always be with you.
Exactly right. So it's not that we're saying neglect the poor. We're saying if they're going to be dealt with, deal with them. If you're going to talk about the Bible and use the Bible, treat them in a way which is consistent with what the Bible says. And that's not what the world is saying and trying to pass off as biblical teaching. But a lot of people simply haven't thought through that very much. Anybody else want to make an observation? Bonnie?
Well, the years that I've been here, there have been multiple times that there has been a calling for a family that is in need of various things. And to my knowledge, it's always people of the congregation just gave out of, you know, of the abundance that they had in their homes that they shared with people, mm-hmm. with the family that's in need. And to me, that's what that verse is talking about, Acts 2:44.
Okay. We'll take that thought and develop it in just a second, unless there's somebody else that wants to interject something. All right. Let's take Bonnie's thought and go back and look at Acts 2:44 and 45 again. And see what's said and see what's not said. And all they that believed were together, no problem there. They had all things common. Well, what's that mean? And they sold their possessions and goods and parted them to all. That's where I think some people stop, but that's not where Luke stopped. He said, not to make them equal, but according as any man or anyone had need. That's important. If you've never noticed that from Acts 2, 44 and 45, that's something that you just need to file away mentally, because somebody comes along and says, well, we just need to redistribute the wealth. No, we don't. We need to make sure that those needs are met. In this case, somebody loses their home to a fire. Somebody's involved with a flood. Someone has had a hurricane hit or a tornado hit, or there's been an earthquake or a mudslide, some other kind of disaster, then certainly this teaches that people do need to help. Let's tie in about three other passages with this to help make the point very, very clear. Galatians 6, verse 5, and then we'll also ask you to back up after a little bit and read Galatians 6, 2. So we'd like you on deck for both of those. We start with Galatians 5, Sherman, then we'll also take a look at John 13, verse 29. John 13, verse 29. Who wants to be a reader for that? Dolores. Okay. Let's start with Galatians 6, verse 5.
For each one shall bear his own load.
Okay. What does God say when it comes to burden bearing or bearing your own load? Do we have some personal responsibility? Yes, we do. God says, look, there are some burdens that you need to bear. Well, in our day and time, that's not always what we hear. Some have come to the conclusion that we'll just let the government bear the burdens. And we'll just eliminate individual responsibility. God says no. It doesn't matter what party you're from. God says that each person needs to bear some of their own responsibilities. Let's see what we find in conjunction with that when we look at John 13, verse 29. Okay. Okay. Did Jesus believe in helping the poor? Yes. And on this occasion, that was one of the thoughts. That was something that had been done. So as far as helping people, there is biblical authority for that. We want to do that to show that love, to show that concern, to show that compassion. And as Bonnie said, we have done that throughout the years here. But in conjunction with that, let's also bear in mind Galatians 6, verse 2.
Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ.
Okay, so you do have some individual responsibilities. Galatians 6, verse 5. You also have times where burdens need to be shared, burdens need to be borne by others, Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. Now, one other quick point, and then we'll stop and see if there's something that you want to ask. Might there be a situation where somebody needs help or might need help, and you don't give them the help actually, but you're just standing there ready? Can we help in that way? In other words, you are prepared to throw out a lifeline. You make it clear that you're ready to help. You're standing right there, and all the person needs to do is ask. Are there some times like that in life?
You're waiting for them to ask.
Okay.
Just dish it out? Is that what you're getting?
Yes, that's kind of along the lines I'm headed towards. Brian?
I think like a responder and a sports event, like weightlifting. You got someone there standing ready to help if you need it, but they're going to let you do it if you can.
Yeah, outstanding illustration. Can you take that and make that a little more personal? Some specific examples. You're like the spotter. Standing there, letting them know we're ready to help.
I think as a parent, you might do that with your kids sometimes. Mm-hmm. You show them what to do, then let them do it and struggle through it.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's not help as far as what we're looking at here, but that was one of the first illustrations that came to my mind as well. You know, you hopefully can get yourself through this set of circumstances, but we're going to be here if you need us. What else?
In a work situation, could be the same thing.
Okay, somebody's struggling to pay rent at work, and, you know, we're $200 short, and it's the 15th of the month, the rent's due on the 30th. You can kind of keep abreast of that. I'll tell you, I was a young preacher in Fort Wayne, and there was a program in town. It was a denominational program. It was focused on the family. they wanted to give several of the books and present a program to people and kind of show them what they had and whatnot, and I went. And to this day, I can call the guy's name. He's probably dead by now, but I remember that man's offer. I never took it up and never called him. But he said, I know what it's like to be on the other side of the fence. And he said, if there's ever a time in life where you need, maybe you've blown a tire, or you just need $50 for something, maybe there's a prescription, he said, you call me, and I'll make it good. Now, he didn't say, I'll buy you a new house. He didn't say, I'll pay off your car, or I'll send you to Bermuda on a vacation. But he said, if there's something that comes up in your life, he said, I've got your back. Maybe just because the age I was at the time, I remembered that, and I still recall that. I can actually visualize what that was. And that made a positive impression on me from somebody who was doing some things as far as religiously not consistent with the scriptures. And I thought oftentimes over the years that we can be, to use Brian's word, that spotter for some people. You know, not that we've got unlimited cash and that we can just run around doing this, that, and the other thing, but there are some times where we can say to a person, look, I know that you are going through this or that, and we want to be there to help you if we can in this set of circumstances. Brian? Oh, okay. I thought you had an additional thought there. Oh, it was Bonnie, I'm sorry. And then Marcia.
In that Galatians 6:2, if we're not involved with the members of our fold, we can't know if they've got a burden that they need help with. So to me, that right there pulls in the visitation and the closeness of the flock.
Yeah. You get back to that idea of common, that we have all gone through the same process, we're all part of the same group, we have many of the same struggles, we're all trying to get to the same place. We are a family. We are one body, as far as a church universally, but especially in that congregational sense locally. And we may be on the larger side, we might be on the smaller side, but we're in this together. We want to help one another to the best of our ability. And sometimes that help will be direct, sometimes it may be the spotter version, but that's really, really good. Marcia?
I was just going to ask if your story about the guy in Fort Wayne made you think of Dave Ramsey's philosophy, you live below your means. You live like no one else, you can live like no one else. And basically what he's saying is, get your financial self in order so that someday you can help other people. So that's basically what that guy was talking about.
Yeah, and really I think he did. And I think you see that here in Acts chapter 2, right. That people had made some... they were religious, so they understood some of the Old Testament teachings about stewardship. They'd made some good choices, and when that need was there. In fact, I don't know that I'm going...
They were able to help then, because they had prepared for it.
Let me actually give you this quote. I hadn't planned to give this out today. But Adam Clark, an old commentator from, I think, back in the 1800s, he said this, as far as a quote, and then we'll take your handstand. He said, perhaps this has not been well understood. At all the public religious feasts in Jerusalem, there was a sort of community of goods. No man at such times hired houses or beds in Jerusalem. All were lent free or freely by the owners. The same may be well supposed of their ovens, cauldrons, tables, spits, and other utensils. Also provisions of water were made for them at public expense. Therefore, a sort of community of goods was not a strange thing at Jerusalem at such times as these. It appears, however, that this community of goods was carried further, for we are informed, he specifically cites Acts 2:45, that they sold their possessions and their goods and parted them to all as every man had need. So the Jews, based on what I can tell, already had sort of an inbuilt philosophy. We're in Jerusalem. We're going to have some people come in. We're willing to let you use our ovens, our utensils, our beds, our houses, whatever that might be. Christianity kicks that up to a new level as you look at Acts chapter 2, verses 44 and 45. And that is something that some congregations might do very well with today. I'm not persuaded that that might be the majority. Because the idea, we'll give you our utensils, here's a bed, you can live with us for a little while. You don't see that, and I know that circumstances are a lot different now than they were way back when people have other options, government options and whatnot. But still, it's a teaching that needs to be communicated to all, especially to our younger people. Stan, and then Bonnie, we'll go back to you.
I don't know the significance necessarily of this or how significant it is, but in the story of the Good Samaritan, when the Samaritan took the man to the inn, he paid for his care. And then he said, and if more is needed, I'll take care of it when I get back.
Yeah, and in that case, it was a stranger. It wasn't one of his, at least he didn't know the guy. So, yes. Bonnie?
I know when my kids were growing up, I can remember at least two kids that were in dire straits that did not have a place to live, and other people took them in. One, I think, for as much as 2 years, a family just willingly just took her in. So that kind of falls in that category, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Only helping, especially when their children are still in school.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be cash out of the bank to do that. It might be that you're caring for a child. You've got two parents who work. Beatrice and I have tried to talk to a neighbor next door over the years, and you know, kind of limited success there. But in this case, the husband owns a business, and he's away. I was talking with him the other night, and he said, now my wife is working full-time at the company I have. And he said, that's posing some problems for us. You know, two smaller kids and trying to get back in the bus. And I said, you know, Teresa's usually home during the day. I'm there a good bit as well. But if we can help, you know, especially Tricia, she's very good with kids, let us know. So, again, you know, you make those offers, and that wasn't saying that next week at 2 o'clock in the afternoon we need to make sure that we're there and we can grab the kids. But at least he knows, or hopefully realizes, that the offer was good, and if something comes up and somebody needs to be there to watch the kids or get the kids off the bus and keep them for an hour or two or whatever, that he's got a neighbor who will go ahead and help out. So Christians should be known for those kinds of things and be visible in those kinds of areas. Anybody else? Okay. When you think about going back to the idea of socialism and communism for just a little bit, and you've seen this some with all the political rhetoric, one of the ways that is designed to appeal people to... One of the ways that's marketed is to tell people what? If you adopt this philosophy, we get this guy or we get these people in office, what are you going to get? You're going to get a bunch of free stuff. We're going to give you free school. We're going to give you free health care. We're going to make everything equal. You get some free money. Well, that sounds great. But is free really free? No. Well, yeah, it is for some, but who's got to pay for it? Somebody else. I mean, the old saying, money just doesn't grow on trees. Well, would that biblically pose a problem for you? This side gets the free stuff. This side has to pay for it. Is there a problem with that? You're getting the free stuff. You love it. But what about you? You're not being treated as you want to be treated. Is that a problem? Yeah. It is. Remember Matthew 7, verse 12? The paraphrase of that is treat people as you want to be treated. So when somebody comes along and says, I'm in favor of socialism, I'm in favor of communism, look at what I'm going to get. That to me seems to be the antithesis, the very opposite of Christianity when you look at that foundational point that is the golden rule. Two, you have this issue. And we'll come back to this again, but let's take a look at 2 Thessalonians. Second Thessalonians, we'll just, for the present moment, take a look at 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10. Somebody want to read it?
For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat.
Okay. That verse is pretty plain, isn't it? If you're not willing to work, then you don't deserve food. All right? Compensation goes hand in hand with work, and food. And without work, don't let the guy share in that. And so again, you may not live under the system of government that you would prefer, but if you're trying to take socialism or communism and say, well, look, everybody, regardless of what they do, everybody should share equally, you just can't square that up with the Bible. Now, if you go back, and I'm not old enough to remember this, so some of this I pulled from an article not too long ago. There was a fellow, he did some writing, PhD, Cold War and communism. That was kind of his thing. And he noted how, when you look at America's foreign policy back from 1945 to 1991, there was that 50-year period, or thereabouts, Russia, the Soviet Union, took virtually every part of its economy and put it under government control. And included in that would have been business, healthcare, education. And the thinking was, at that time, so we've got a modern example of this, the thinking of it was at that time to create this utopian environment where everybody's going to be treated equally, there's going to be complete fairness, and everything is going to be wonderful. Everybody has an equal part in the system. Well, I was, fortunately, able to go into Russia and Ukraine within 6 months of the fall of communism. So the system that had been in place for that about 50-year period was still largely intact when I was there. And I had the chance to see some of the leftovers of communism, including some of the places where they trained their kids in summer camps about it, saw the posters and all the propaganda. You still had that up in several parts of those two countries, and able to talk to a lot of the people who had been under that. And I'll tell you what I saw. I saw apartment buildings and houses that reminded me a lot of the 1950s in the United States from the pictures that I saw. The buildings were all the same. Apartment buildings, you've got gray apartment buildings, and I mean, it's just one right after the other. It almost, anybody ever been to like a public housing area, especially back in the 70s? If you can remember, okay, a few, you can remember maybe the apartment buildings, and they all had the very same look. The government just came in and built the housing, and it was just one right after the other. Well, that's not necessarily bad. I mean, if you don't have six different colors in a block. But as you went in and you started to look at those structures, you go into the homes, and I had the chance to do that as well. You saw that the state of disrepair. I was there at a time, and this, I think, has largely probably gone by the wayside now. But you could see people standing in line for bread. They would get there at early times in the morning, maybe 3 or 4, probably by 5, you're too late. They would stand, and maybe Jenny saw some of this as too, some of this as well, with her time overseas in Romania. And after they had been in line for maybe 6, 7, 8 hours, all the bread was gone. So you've wasted your day seeking bread, and now you go home and you're finally told that there is no bread. I had gone to some department stores, and these were in larger cities. You go in there, and Target's not my favorite store for a lot of reasons. But if you've gone into Target recently, it's a little different, at least the last time I was in there, than Walmart, because Target will seem to have one or two items. For example, if you're looking at deodorant, you're looking at toothpaste, it's like there's just one or two items, whereas some other stores might have five or six behind it. But at least the place where I was in Target, there wasn't much. Well, Russia didn't even have that. You've got a lot of shelf space, and there's maybe one thing here, and then 4, 6, or 8 inches down, you've got another thing, and there really wasn't much to choose from. There were the camps that they had. I didn't have a chance to visit any of those. That probably wasn't the safest thing, but they had the political purges. People would be arrested. They would be held without trial. You, of course, have the dissidents. Some of them were writers. Some of them were authors, painters, and some of those people just disappeared. And, you know, all of that history, for some, just seems to have kind of gone by the wayside. And now people look at what that was, where it led to, and they say, this will be helpful to America. Well, depending on what you hope to achieve, you know, this is where it led when you look at the former Soviet Union. And yet a lot of people, I think, look at the Bible and think that this is the way to live, and certainly it is not. Even when you go back in the Old Testament, you do find focus on the poor. Remember back there in the book of Leviticus, Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10, God said, if you're going to go out and harvest the fields, what don't you do? All right, some has to be left. You don't go and you don't glean every possible thing. You leave some, not for the rodents, but for who? The poor. The poor can come back in and collect some food. So whether you look at the Old Testament, whether you look at the New, you do have the idea here of helping the poor. Now, as you go back to Acts 2, we sometimes talk about verb tenses, and that's important, especially in light of the discussion that we've had. When you look at that word that's translated sold, remember some of the previous discussions? Action can take what kind? You know, I chopped down the tree. What does that suggest about the action? Past, and I mean it was right there at that moment. But somebody else says, I'm sawing down the tree. How's that different? All right, it's ongoing. It's the present tense. It is continuous action. When you look at Acts 2, and the Bible says they sold their possessions. If this were communism, if this were socialism, what do you think the text would say as far as the tense? They took. Well, or yes, they took their possessions and they sold them. That's what you would, I think, find consistent, but that's not what's used as far as the tense. They sold them. They continuously or on a regular basis sold them. And we explained that based on what Bonnie said earlier. They sold them how often? As anyone had need. So here's the person in today's society. The house burns down. They need to raise, or maybe there's a child who's sick. No insurance. Christians decide that they're going to help. So somebody decides to sell their car. Somebody decides to sell their boat. Somebody decides to sell their second house, whatever it might be. So you do have those kinds of things. When you begin to piece all this together, and this is not something I came up with, somebody else came up with it, but I really like it. He said it was not communism. It was commonism. Commonism. And I like that. Because the word common is used in the text, and it describes that these people are in the same boat, and we are willing to help and share. Anything that you want to add or ask? All I can tell you is what I found in Russia and Ukraine. And that was the government. Well, let me preface that by asking, when you talk about morals, is there a specific aspect of that, or are you just...
Like prostitution. We'll use that.
Okay. All right. In the two countries that I was in on multiple occasions, multiple years, the government pretty much ruled with an iron fist. And it was like they had put a band around Russia and Ukraine. And when communism fell, that band popped off. It would be just like a band of lumber. If you've ever popped that band and was really tight, or you've had something else that was constricting something, as soon as you loosen that, bang, it just pops off. And the lumber might start spilling out all over, or whatever was being bound together, held together, all of a sudden you just have it going all over the place. And that's what happened. But they did have what I would refer to as a basic moral code. Prostitution, my understanding of that was... it was kind of like here. There will be some places where you could find it, but it was illegal. Murder, the basic things that you would see as far as, crimes against people, because they wanted an orderly society. And anything that would seem to go against law and order, it was, let's just go ahead and make sure that we have a rule against it, and let's enforce it. And it was to the point where if you went up to a bank, and I think I may have said this before, but if you went up to a bank, almost... like an outside teller. You would have, just think of regular bank tellers, but instead of going inside the building, you're standing outside. You're standing in a line. And they had guys with nightsticks. And if you got feisty, they would use the nightstick, hit you in the kneecap, hit you in the head. So it was a very effective system from some perspectives, but it was also a very brutal system because you've eliminated God. And socialism, communism, that's not exactly the kind of thing that you have when it comes to spirituality. But as we're going to rule with an iron fist. And you do get some morality there, but that's coerced. That's really forced. You're forcing giving, you're forcing the morality, and you're putting people into those molds where what we think of as far as freedom, you have very, very limited freedom. Anybody else? All right, let's see what else. Back to this idea of communism. One source, as he continued to talk about this, said, "What is mine is thine when needed." I like that. What is mine is thine when needed. But that's not what you find with socialism and communism. Communism, socialism says, what is thine is mine. Now, one other point that we need to make about that. You have the restrictions that we've seen and that we've talked about from Acts 2. They gave as needed. But I also think that you have a stepping away from that as time moves on. Now, we gave the quote from the commentator back in the 1800s, but I think you see less and less of that. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 7 through 10, we read that as far as part of it, 2 Thessalonians 3:10. But you do get to a point where the people would have gone back home and so forth, and that does not seem to have been so much a regular part of the church. Then this idea as well, even with the good intentions in Acts 2, and Acts chapter 4. Were there some problems that came with this sharing? Well, let's let the Bible answer. Skipping over a couple pages, Acts chapter 5, let's see what we've got in Acts chapter 5, verses 1 through 3. But a certain man named Ananias and Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thy heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back part of the price of the land? And then he goes on from there. When you get to this idea of let's combine things and let's share them together, Is it without problems? No. So once again, people go back and say, well, if everybody just shared, we would have this utopian environment and everything would be great. The Bible doesn't support that either. And then you could flip over one more chapter and see what you find in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 6, verse 1. Now in these days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose what? A murmuring of the Grecian Jews against the Hebrews because they were neglected in the daily menstruation. Once again, people have this idea, if there's just this sharing, if there is this equality, everybody is going to be happy, we're going to be singing Kumbaya, and everybody goes home and everything's great. That's not what the Bible teaches. You've got two examples back to back that show some problems with that. Now, we've talked about some individual needs, but let's deal with one other matter, and then we'll close it out there today. What about congregational needs? In Acts 2 and Acts chapter 4, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, we're talking about physical needs. But what about when it comes to a congregation's needs?
Should be willing to help out there as well.
All right. Anybody want to be a little more specific with that? That is, I think, the biblical answer.
Teaching.
All right. Dad? What happens when you need a new well? Some would say, well, let's go to a sister congregation and try to find funds. Well, you know, you could do that. But first, what should we do? Let's look among our own selves and see if we can come up with the funds. You know, everybody's going to have different resources. But looking out among our own selves to see if we can cover those items, it's certainly biblical. But we do have those responsibilities. We do have those duties. And sometimes we end up digging deeper for certain occasions, certain situations, than at other times. Dolores? That could happen. I'm sure that has happened on certain occasions. I do want to spend a class, it may not be next week, it may be 2 weeks from now, but talking about benevolence and some things, because that's an area where a lot of people are not very comfortable, whether it's a Christian or whether it's a non-Christian. With a Christian, maybe we do a little bit better. With a non-Christian, people just say, well, call an elder, call a preacher. We can probably do a little bit better with that if we start thinking through some things, and I want to dedicate a class to that. If you're dealing with that, I'm assuming that you either have some men involved or you have some elders involved. Maybe a preacher is the one who gets that initial call. Anytime somebody comes asking for help, there's going to be a judgment call. In other words, is this a yes or is this a no? And if this is a yes or if this is a no, is it an immediate yes or an immediate no? Or is this something that we need to look at perhaps a little bit later? Going back to Brian's statement a little bit earlier, we're going to be a spotter and say we're aware of the situation, we're looking at that. And then you have the other questions as well. For example, I had somebody ask me, this came up the other day, if a person comes in and they smoke, the cigarettes are not necessary to life. Now, a person might feel like they're really necessary, but if they're spending money on cigarettes, would we want to help in any way, even to the point of giving them food? And every set of circumstances, from what I can tell, is going to be different. And you're making a series of judgment calls. Sometimes I think we get it exactly right. Sometimes we could have done better, and sometimes it's a disaster. And there have been some people that have been told no when they should have been told yes.
I'm not even talking benevolence. I'm talking about a group of elders who had someone come to them with a need, an emotional, spiritual need. And the answer was, bear your own burden.
Yeah. Well.
And is that verse
It, you have there
in the
what?
Does it have anything to do with our spiritual well-being?
I would not hesitate to make application to that point and say that we can use that passage in that way as well. Unfortunately, have people sometimes who in that area, maybe a man, would be less inclined than a woman to take up more of an emotional, mental issue. Some guys are not really comfortable in the area. And especially if we're in eldership, you know, maybe it was just, you know, we're going to talk about feelings or this, that, or the other thing. Go find somebody else. You know, work it out on your own. Go talk to a therapist or something. That's not a good response. Going back to the golden rule, we wouldn't want to be treated that way. So it might be I think, helpful in that situation for them to say, this is something that we want to make sure that you could help with. We need to figure out how to do that. And right on the spur of the moment, we're glad that you came. We're glad that you asked. We, at this point, need to, you know, do some thinking as far as how to best help you. So can we get together tomorrow or in a week, whatever that might be, and then take that rather than just turn the cold shoulder and throw somebody out in the cold. That's not good. So if you need to refer that, then find a referral. But treat the person like you would treat someone that you deeply care about. And sometimes I think that's just good intentions gone bad. It was out of ignorance, perhaps. At least that would be my hope that happened. But sometimes people are just, inclined to say the first thing that comes out of the mouth, and that may not always be good.